when we started this program 9 years ago, we had already been writing a column in the Indianapolis Recorder every week for 9 years. It's now been 18 years. And one of the things I made a decision about when I started this program on the radio was that I was not going to read what I wrote in the Recorder. I was going to try to keep what I wrote in the Indianapolis Recorder every week separate from what we did here on the radio. Part of that was, I'll be honest, want people to go buy the Recorder. People at the Recorder want you to buy a Recorder every week. That's how that newspaper will continue to survive. And over these last 9 years, occasionally people would get mad about something I wrote in the newspaper and would call the people here at the radio station and yell at them. Or they would get mad at something that I said on radio and they would call the people up at the Recorder and get mad at them. So over these 9 years, I've kept the two separate, sort of like a division between church and state. I'm going to break my own rule once today, because something has been weighing on my mind for about the last couple of months. You all listening through your comments, through your calls, through your emails, through your text messages, have kind of weighed on me and influenced this. And it's something we've got to come to grips with as a community. So for this one time only, what I'm about to say to you is being published today in the newest issue of the Indianapolis Recorder in our weekly column. And I'm going to share with you what was written so that all of you that read it, go out and read it for yourself or read it online at IndianapolisRecorder.com. And those of you listening in Indianapolis and Central Indiana or on AM 1310 The Light or on PraiseIndy.com, you'll all hear this at the same time. And it has to do with leadership. And it starts out, 2013 is here finally. After the excitement of a Super Bowl and a hyperactive election, 2013 promises no big game, no huge event, no elections. So what's next for Indianapolis and our nearly 300,000-strong African-American community? I have a radio listener who regularly emails while I'm on the air asking, where are our leaders? When he started, his emails seemed like a distraction, like what mosquitoes do to you when you're outside during the summer. But the last few months with his question, where are our leaders? My email pen pal has become a Cassandra chorus, warning me of a basic truth. I wrote last year, and I'll repeat it as this new year begins. Indianapolis is suffering from a severe leadership crisis overall and within our African-American community. It's a shame when our city leaders get more excited over adding bicycle lanes or buying fuel-efficient vehicles while doing nothing to figure out how to bring jobs to those unemployed and underemployed in our city and county. This column has talked about the growing divide between well-off and hurting African-American households in Indianapolis. Here's more detail to buttress my case. Between 2000 and 2011, the number of black households in the city county grew by 18.3%, or 14,460. The number of black Indy households earning over $75,000 yearly rose 27.2%, or 2,679. But the number of black Indy households earning under $25,000 yearly also rose by a similar percentage amount, 28.7%. But the actual number of black households earning less than $25,000 increased by more than three times as many, 9,421, than the number of households earning over $75,000. two-thirds, 65.2% of black household growth in Indianapolis in the past decade has been those with annual earnings of less than 25 grand. Our community's income growth is at opposite ends of the earnings continuum, and it's the lack of meaningful jobs that's driving that economic chasm. Just before the Christmas holiday, the latest statewide unemployment figures showed that while the unemployment rate is slowly dropping in the country overall and in Indiana, unemployment in Indianapolis and Marion County increased from 8% in October to 8.5% in November. The number of jobless actually rose by 1,943, and the number working fell by 5,408. 2 weeks ago, Governor Mitch Daniels breathlessly announced thousands of new jobs coming, but which won't materialize for several years. Of course, I'm still waiting for those lightbox jobs promised by Mayor Greg Ballard and the nincompoops at Develop Indy and the state's employment makers at the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, IEDC. And as we've seen from award-winning exposés by WTHR Channel 13 and the recent series in the Indianapolis Star, many of those jobs promised by the state are as ephemeral as those lightbox jobs. And by the way, are those at Develop Indy and IEDC who put the lightbox deal together still on the payroll? If so, why do they have their jobs after such job development fiascos? Given the growing economic divide, what is our city's African-American leadership doing to reduce and/or dissipate this growing economic divide? What are they doing to move our black community forward instead of marking time and treading water? In the days when naked racism kept African-Americans who wanted to work from obtaining meaningful employment, courageous black leaders got up off their butts and took to the streets and boardrooms demanding jobs and justice for our community. Many reading this remember picket lines set up by the Reverends Moselle Sanders and Andrew Brown. Their activism confronted the city's power structure, demanding our community's fair share of the pie. Bill Crawford, the late Glenn Howard, and other activists in the 60s and 70s employed the Brown-Sanders strategy, while the NAACP under Dr. A.D. Pinckney, John Moss, and others used the weapon of the law and the courts to obtain jobs and justice for blacks here. Those black leaders of that day, and the black leaders before them during the days of the visible Ku Klux Klan and the evils of de jure segregation and Jim Crow, understood the importance of operational unity. They may have had tactical and doctrinal differences, but black leaders of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and later in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, understood the importance of coming together, despite differences, to forge and achieve a unified plan of action. Sadly, distressingly, that doesn't exist today. Our African-American leaders are fractured and divided, mistrusting and distrustful. Think I'm making too much of this? We know there's a small, and I mean small, cadre of African-American leaders, quote-unquote, who have the only black access to Indianapolis's increasingly invisible and inaccessible mayor. Okay, so what has that access of these favored, quote-unquote, blacks to the mayor gotten our community? More bike lanes in black neighborhoods? A grant or two to black faith-based organizations? A few blacks with jobs in city government? An unknown amount of black businesses with a few privileged black-owned businesses? The condition of blacks in Indianapolis is eroding, and those blacks with the access to the mayor have nothing to show our community. What are they whispering in the mayor's ear? Sweet nothings or solid demands for action and progress to improve our community? Maybe I'm too much of an idealist to believe that what occurred in years past can occur in the 21st century, that a broad spectrum of leadership of Indianapolis's black community can still get together and fashion an agenda of common goals and ideals, and then implement strategies to achieve them. I strongly believe it's time to publicly call out African-American leadership in Indianapolis, from those who are leaders, those believing they're leaders, those who think they're leaders, even those the white power structure has christened as our leaders. Remember when musicians came together for those group recordings for charity? You know, We Are the World and Do You Know It's Christmas? Those musical superstars buried their egos at the door for a common effort. It's time for Indianapolis's African-American leaders, religious, political, civic, business, Greek, even media, to check our egos and personal agendas at the door and gather together to find common ground on how we reverse the slide and decline, economic and otherwise, in our black community. That's one of my major focuses in 2013. Expect to read and hear more. That's what is written in this week's edition of the Indianapolis Recorder that starts going on sale now. It's online now. We've repeated it here. I will add that there will be a series of programs at the end of this month going into our anniversary week, which is the first full week of February, where we will address this. This is not to embarrass anyone. This is not to put someone on Front Street. But it's time to ask some hard questions. This is also the time that we hear new voices, younger voices, of what do we do as a community. Some of those names I mentioned: Andrew Brown, Moselle Sanders, Bill Crawford, Glenn Howard, when they were out, and others, when they were out there in the street, they were young. They were in their 20s and 30s. Where are those activists today? I'm getting close to AARP. I'm at AARP card age. I'm getting close to Social Security age. What are the ideas of the next generation? What are their solutions to the problems? I talked to somebody yesterday, and we were trying to figure out the last time there had been a broad-based coming together. When I say broad-based, not just the usual gang, not just political, not just religious, a broad-based, business, civic, everybody. And the best we could tell, there was a meeting at the Claver Center. Now, that's going to tell you how long ago that's been, because the Claver Center had been closed for many years. And they remember, I think it was Elder Lionel Rush was a part of it, one of the conveners. Reverend Charles Williams was still living then. So we're talking about the early part of the last decade. That's over 10 years. That's too long not to have a coming together. It's time. We'll take a break and find out what y'all think about all this. Maybe I'm an idealist. Maybe I'm Pollyannish. But if the President of the United States can sit down with John Boehner every now and then, then surely to God, our leadership can come together, check the egos at the door. That means I'd have to check my ego. Temporarily, you know, deal with all the feuds and dislikes. We got to come together. We're not going to agree on everything. But there's some things I know we can agree on. It is way past time. It's Afternoons with Amos. The one of the watchwords for the year, leadership. Let me go to the phones in Hattie. Hi there. Well, Hattie moved on. Let me go to Sean. Hi there. Oh, everybody gave up. Let me go to Reggie. Hi there. Let me go to Carol. Hi, Carol.
You summed it up. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Honestly, Amos, you summed it all up. Leave them egos at the door. Thank you. to you and your family, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I wish there was a place you could pick a place one day and have a town hall meeting or something. I would like to meet some of those callers that call in, Brenda and all of them. I know you can find a building someplace and have a town hall meeting. That's all I want to ask of you for this year.
All right. I'm going to put down to look for the town hall meeting. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let me go to Ronnie. Hi there.
How are you doing, Amos Brown?
I'm fine, sir.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I heard you talking about the people that are not making very much and their income are very low.
Yes.
Did you know that we have a lot of outsourcing in this country? That's one of the reasons why there's not any jobs paying what people need to make a real living. All they got now is these restaurant jobs, these hotel jobs, and most of the Spanish Americans are getting them. And nothing wrong with that, but we are buying everything from people from another country. Check your clothes, all of that coming from another country.
But let's deal with the jobs that are here. I mean, this is not a town that makes where we don't have clothing manufacturers here.
No, we don't.
We don't. That's not what we're into. And one of the problems is they create these jobs, and they have all these jobs, and now we're bringing these jobs, and none of those jobs are filtering down to people in our community who are even qualified for them. And then there's nobody putting pressure on these folks to do right.
Okay,
one
more thing.
Yeah.
Every car that's not made in America or made by a foreign company is causing Americans jobs.
But I understand the America. I'm dealing with what's here.
No TVs are made here by Americans anymore.
But wait a minute. But wait. Part of leadership is we as a community need to understand the type of jobs that are here today, not that what was here 40 years ago. If you think about it, there are no manufacturing of TV jobs in the Indianapolis area at all. Right?
There's no TVs made by America.
But get off the TV. We got to deal with the jobs that are available now, not that what were available 20 years ago.
Right.
So the challenge is making sure that we have a pipeline of our people who are underemployed to get employed with these jobs they're bringing here and not have an okey-doke of them having a big announcement downtown, we're bringing in 500 jobs. All right, it's not fair. 450 of those jobs go to people in the suburbs and only 50 go to people here. Bad deal.
Right, right.
But if we as leaders aren't sitting in a room and coming together and strategize how to deal with the problems of the 21st century, how are we going to deal with them? You see, you brought up the economic situation of the 1970s and 80s. That them days is over with.
Right.
We've got to deal with the 10s and the 20s.
You're right.
And strategize from that. It's like we're playing baseball with little league rules, and they playing in the major leagues.
Okay, it still comes back to jobs where it says made in America.
Yep.
It's got to get to that point.
Now, it's not only made in America, but brain power in America. I understand your point. I appreciate it. Let me go to Robert. Hi, Robert.
How you doing, Amos? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Your family.
Happy New Year.
Speech that, I said topic that you wrote in the paper was right on point. And I completely agree with what you said in your article. But like you just got through telling the other caller, you got to work with what you have. You got to formulate a strategy to combat what is occurring right now. Jobs are coming in. We have some qualified people that would meet the requirements of those jobs, but we have no voice in the decision-making process to where those jobs will be located. So consequently, once you don't get powers to be don't get any heat from the people that it affect most, then they go ahead on and assume that everything is okay within the African-American community. What I'm so glad that you brought this about today, because I've been thinking like this all along. And the gentleman that you just got through talking with, he is speaking on a globalized,
right,
from a globalized perspective. We all know that manufacturing is not a key issue in this in the economy in this city and state today. But you got to take and have some leaders that's going to take and mobilize the black community and say, we are taxpayers. We want to share in the bounty of these jobs being brought in here. But as long as the powers to be can locate those jobs in Fishers, Carmel, and other outlying town/counties, then they are going to do that. And what is really occurring is that we got these so-called charlatans masquerading as leaders that are not speaking out because they are so heavily vested in the corruption and the mishandling of the black community that they can't speak. They can't speak out because it jeopardized their position. And like I've always known that when you're tied up with a corrupt system, you become a part of that system. And I look at some of these people on just daily observation. They are worse exploiters than the Caucasian. We missed the boat when we think that all of our problems are coming from from the Caucasian. Sure, he's the originator of the plan, but a lot of these so-called black exploiters/charlatans are really executing the plan against the black community.
But I also want to be fair, Robert. Sometimes back in the day,
yeah,
there were people doing the outside strategy and the inside strategy.
Absolutely.
And let's just assume for a minute that there's people really doing an inside strategy. Okay, fine. Then let's come together, and those of you doing the inside strategy, finally tell us what has been the result of your strategy.
You're absolutely right. You got to have, in order to have effective mobilization, you got to have an unimpeded line of communication.
Yeah, in other words, if you have access to the mayor and a whispering in his ear and you've gotten tangible results, then come tell the community what are the tangible results.
Right, and if you can't do that, then that tells me in very loud terms that you are an ineffective leader/communicator.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to Raymond at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, good afternoon. Hey.
Good afternoon.
My comment today is, in the 60s or during the civil rights movement, when the laws were enacted for us to have the freedoms that, of course, at all times that we deserved and that were part of what we were deserved to have. But it seems like over time, decade to decade, there comes up distractions. Like after the civil rights movement and the laws, everyone came together as a community to figure out, okay, now, so how are we going to do this since we have these laws
right
that protect us so we can be productive? Then the 70s came, and there came the industries and the manufacturing and the car companies. Then the 80s came, and it was like there's a plethora of, the distractions of drugs and other things coming in into the community. Then the 90s came, and technology really took off, and it went on into the next decade. And now we're using the technologies, but we're not making the technologies because the distraction is to use them, buy them, and have them, phones, computers, and all of that. And I guess it comes down to we've done a lot of storytelling in a lot of the sessions I've been to, but I haven't heard a lot of, like you were saying, the things that we can, I guess, put down as a plan. And I know with me in management, I only say that because it seems like there's a fear to step out and step forward because are there ramifications? What will happen if I'm a lawyer and I've gone to college and I'm African-American and I step out and I stand for, will that mean that I'm not politically correct? Or, you know, I think there's some people that are, like, holding back because, honestly, they just don't know, or maybe they're like, well, I don't want to mess my name up if I get involved with it. You see what I'm saying?
Well, and you've raised a number of issues. I think one of the challenges that we are going to deal with is having the community hear some younger voices in business, some younger voices in the political arena, some younger voices in the spiritual arena. As I've started talking to people about this issue of leadership, you know, I'm hearing that there are younger African Americans, you know, between their mid-20s and 40s, who are out here in business, who are trying to be out here in the civic arena, who are out here trying to do positive things, maybe, you know, taking advantage of and building businesses using the new technology, maybe in small ways, creating jobs. And I think we need to hear, okay, where y'all coming from? You know, what should this community, we need to be hearing new voices. I had a conversation yesterday with one other gray-haired activist in town, and we were trying to figure out, where are the young activists? The ones, you know, Glenn Howard took a risk getting out there on point. Moselle was a young pastor coming out there on point. What we don't see in this community yet are younger activists coming out here, whether taking it to the street or maybe doing some grassroots things, and they've been kind of quiet doing their thing. Well, what I got to do is try to figure out, okay, who are these people? Let's bring them to the community so the community can hear. Maybe they got a great idea. Maybe.
But do you think they've become so mainstream that they feel like if they do that, they'll become on one side and not the other? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know.
Right. I'm just wondering, because once you go to college, you get a master's, a doctorate, and you go and get these different degrees, and you become part of, quote-unquote, the mainstream and the masses, then you try to stand up in front of a congregation or a thousand people and say, look, we need to work on our community. Does that tip them to one side versus be massive? You know, I don't know.
I know that. Wait. I already got a text from a hater already. Their text at 8. Oh, you got to hear this. This is a good one. At 85620, keyword Amos. You have the biggest ego in the city. When you don't agree with someone, you deride them using a mocking voice. I guess that's my mocking voice. To read their text and call them the KKK. Well, Mr. Text Messenger, whose phone number starts with 50, then I'm going to assume right now that you're African American. And remember, I said those of you that are leaders, those of you that think you're leaders, those of you that you don't know whether you're a leader, but you might be a leader. Okay, Mr. Text Messenger at phone number that begins with 50. I'm going to assume you're an African American leader. What is your brilliant solution to the problems facing our community? Send me your text now, Mr. Phone Number. Don't, see, that's the other thing. Don't just come here and criticize. Come with a solution. Right. Come with an idea.
Right.
I don't even mind I have the biggest ego in the city, because obviously somebody that starts a letter like that, he has the bigger ego. I appreciate the call. Let me go to Dorothy at 239-1310. Hi there.
Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You know what the whole thing is.
What?
He came in, the mayor, snatched all our wonderful persons up. And after you've been hired, you can't really say anything.
I think it's a larger issue than the particular mayor, because leadership in this community have confronted past mayors. They've confronted John Barton. They confronted Dick Lugar. They confronted
Amos.
Yep.
But this is a whole new thing now with the job situation. Mm-hmm. That's just like with our young people. Like you say, they're not out there doing anything and talking about all this. They're talking to each other, but they got a job. They don't want to lose their job. So they're not coming out and doing that kind of fighting that was going on back in our day. there listening, complaining, but I got a job. I might lose my job if I say something.
That's a good point. But see, I want to hear from them. I think the community want to hear from them. But they're, you know, we've got technology. We can disguise their voice, give them a different name.
Okay, maybe if we let them know that. That's just like the Ian Light Flynn group. If you, just like you said a minute ago, come to us to the community. They can't do that because the inside will lose theirs. If they can talk to you and you don't tell no names and no numbers and none of that, just explaining what we can get busy doing, okay. But if you think they're going to go, the inside folks going to go and come and talk to the community and go back to the, it ain't going to work like that no more.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Sean at 239-1310. Hi there. Sean? We've answered Sean's question. Let me go to Anonymous. Hi there. Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I was just thinking, I had mentioned this before a while back. Too many times we spend our money in Hollywood on things that are really not important. And everybody knows what's going on in Hollywood is very immaterial, non-realistic. But yet our children, our teenagers, and our young people watch that. If we, as their adults and younger young adults would take some of the money that we use to buy iPads and all this stuff that we buy and invest it in our communities. And maybe the leaders aren't civil rights leaders, but maybe they could be the doctors and the lawyers and the businesses and the people, the police, and all this. Bring them into our community. Build buildings. I would be willing. I don't have any children, but as someone who has nieces and nephews,
let me back up. What kind of building are we talking about?
In our different buildings in our community.
Like what? What kind of building? A house, an apartment, an office? What kind of building?
Good question.
That's a good question because at the same time, I understood the thing about Hollywood, but when you tell we're investing in iPads, iPad is the tool that people are going to, when we grew up, our basic tool was a pen and a sheet of paper. To young people today, their basic tool is an iPad.
I don't mean taken away from that. I mean other things like DVDs. Music, anything that's not really all that important. We could take some of that and
But what are we investing in? We have more African-American lawyers in this town than any time in history. We have more African-Americans in business who own businesses than in this town than any time in history. That's a fact. Now, if it is... building a hotel in the black community, that's unrealistic.
No, a community center or something like that where we could train our young people, age 18 and under, through the guidance of people who are in business and doctors and lawyers, what have you, ministers, what have you, and train them in a positive light to do great things when they get older, maybe things would work out a little
but
better.
But we have community centers that are doing that. Now, maybe not in every neighborhood. But we have a lot of community centers. We have churches that are doing that. I think part of leadership is we also have to tell our community, 300,000 strong, what assets and what positives we actually do have that's here. Because I hear that we don't have any community centers. I'm going, my Lord. We've got multi-service centers that are open. We have churches that have programs that are open in the evening. We've got some school, YMCA has programs in school after school in a number of schools. There's a bunch of stuff that is going on.
Well, a lot of people are not aware of that.
There's the rub, or there's part of the rub. They don't know. And how do we open those lines of communication? That's the point. And so part of leadership is bringing people up to speed of what's happening in 2013. Not 1983. Back to the thank you, Anonymous. Great contributions. Let me go to another Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
I'm probably going to get shot for this one. But the thing of it is, I was just thinking what some of the callers were saying. We got to go back to, like you said, Glenna Howard and all the, see, none of these fancy, clean fingernail people, they don't want to get their hands dirty. See, they've gotten comfortable because they've gotten in bed with the opposition. See, that's what has happened. They don't want to speak out. They don't want to make any waves. They're scared somebody's going to attack them. You can look at it the way they do their families.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at men. Okay, even women, but we'll say men because they're supposed to be the head and not the tail. Look at the ones with 30. They'll say the 50 or 55. A lot of the other men like Moselle, Glenn, all of them that are over 60, they are dying. Okay, they're the ones that went out there and took a chance on going to jail for standing up for equality and trying to help all of us.
Right.
Okay, look at the ones now at the age bracket. They so busy wanting to be glamorized that don't want to make any waves or scared if you live in Carmel, if you raise your voice, they're going to stop you or whatever. People are scared. These people are the police are either over the mayor's council or whatever, have gotten people scared to speak out. But like I said, you can even tell that because the men won't even stand up for their own children.
Mm.
They won't even stand up for their children. They won't go stand and protest. We are our army here. We can raise some eyebrows here, but they won't do it. Uh-huh. And then a lot of them will sit back and talk about, you see this? You see that, but what are you doing to help them pull their pants up? I talk to that brother.
Right.
I talk to that sister. They won't do it.
All right, good points. Let me go to Reggie at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos.
How you doing?
Some good comments have been made, and I applaud you for taking the leadership to hopefully galvanize and prick the minds of the listening audience. There's a drastic need of community leadership. You notice I said community leadership. I'm talking about those well-off, those that are not well-off, and the young people. We need them to get involved. We need to hear what they have to say. It's some excellent businessmen, businessmen. It's some excellent young clergy people that is out there doing things. They're doing it. They don't get no recognition for doing it. But there are some new leaders out there that need to come forth. What we need to have is someone like you that can pull this all together, that can bring people together. Yes, on your shoulders, man. That can bring people together to do just what you said and put pressure on the state, put pressure on the city. Yes, it takes people getting up off their butts and coming collectively together, leaving the ego at the door and do what needs to be done for the community and most of all for our children.
Reggie, is it your memory that it's been more than 10 years since we've had a broad coming together of leadership?
Yes, Amos, it's been more. I was counting it, too. It's been more than 10 years. Glynell, Charles Williams, all of them were a part of it, but I want to go further than that in terms of effectiveness. The most effective group of people coming together, it was called by Dr. Lloyd. And Dr. Lloyd brought everybody together. We sit down and we plan things. Now, I don't know if it was because at that time Ford and Chrysler, they weren't hiring. Glenn Nim was pushing that through. It was a lot of things that was happening around the same time that made the community advance. And seemed like once it advanced, then it started taking a downhill road, Amos,
mm-hmm.
a downhill road in terms of the advocacy of people like Moselle, Reverend Brown, and others, Reverend Dennis, and I can go, Reverend Gurdon, I can
right.
go on and on. It went start sliding the other way, and then it seemed like it got kind of personal. And certain people, I got mine, you get yours the best way we can. But it's time to stop that and look at what's critically happening and figure out what can we do to bring enterprises in the community. See, when we talk about community, statistics will show you that we everywhere, Amos. We're not just in one pocket.
And we all over the place. No, you're good points. Let me go to some other folks. I'm running out of time. Let me go to Bill at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So is it your perception, Citizen Bill Crawford, has been more than 10 years?
Well, I think it's been more than 10 years, Amos, because as I recall, the Cummins Togethers, they were around specific issues and they were reactive.
Right.
They were not proactive, and we need to be proactive. And so I say to you, you have a great idea. Let me just offer a recommendation and a suggestion.
Okay.
And that recommendation and suggestion is that we don't need to be looking for a new Messiah.
Nope.
There are people out there that are specialists. I think to illustrate the conversation you had with Ken Falk, as I recall that conversation you just had with Ken Falk on your program, Ken Falk said that there's a rule in the federal courts that you have to have narrow construction.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that the case decided by Judge Pratt was a issue that only affects persons that are incarcerated in the Indiana Department of Correction.
Right.
It does not impact the broader community. And so if we're talking about the issue of how do we expand mental health options mm-hmm. to the broader community, you need to have mental health professionals and mental, which I'm not one. I don't have an ego that says I got to be involved in every solution. I come in where I can fit in and I can contribute. But the issue is that we've got to focus not on one issue. We've got to focus on broad issues and broad concerns, and you need educators to offer recommendations on education. You need business people.
To offer recommendation on business.
On business and economics. You need healthcare people to offer recommendations on healthcare delivery and all these kind of things. So I hope the Lord allows me to be around when the meeting is convened. And even if I'm only on the periphery, let me suggest to you, you have a great idea. We do need to make sure that intergenerational leadership is developed. It's allowed to. The one thing about it, I was young, and Reverend Brown and Moselle and Dr. Lloyd and Reverend Dennis and Gerton and Lyons and all the rest of them, they gave Glenn and I some air to grow. They put us out there and let us make our own mistakes. They would correct us, but they would bring us inside and spank our butt.
And I think that we don't see where's that next group that, you know, that's nurturing and developing. Good points, Bill. I appreciate that. And we'll follow up with you. Let me go to, is it Kenneth? Right quick at 239-1310. Kenneth, we're on a shorter time. We got about a minute. Kenneth's gone. Let me go to Daniela at 239. Daniela, you got about a minute.
Okay. Amos.
Yes.
This is Danielle.
Danielle, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to, I'm young, I'm 28, mm-hmm. and I agree with the leadership in the city that is lacking in our generation. What I have learned is that there's a disconnection between your generation and our generation. And for some odd reason, we can't come together and become, you know, our generation doesn't listen to you all and you all don't listen to us. And I feel like as far as leadership is concerned, there has to be a connection between the two because we need each other.
Let me ask you a quick question because I'm running short of time. If I asked you who out there in your generation is a potential leader, if I were looking to try to gather some folks to come on in that generation, can you provide that information to us?
Yes, I can provide a name.
Okay, a name or two?
My boss, Shedrick Crawford, he's over at the Planter House.
Okay.
He's a leader.
Okay.
He does youth coordination. He does stuff outside.
I tell you what, hold on and give that information to Chris on my staff, okay? Because I'm starting to be like Santa Claus. I'm collecting a list, okay?
Okay.
All right, that'll allow me to talk to Anonymous. Anonymous, you're the last caller for the day. You have a minute.
Okay. I would like to say I agree with the previous callers. And there seems to be a lack of not only leadership, but a lack of information.
Absolutely.
Can't act on half-truths.
Mm-hmm.
Can't act on myths. And so there needs to be a starting point where we get the facts in each one of those areas. And that calls for older people that know it. It calls for middle group people that have practiced it and practicing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then it calls for the young that has the energy to implement over a longer period of time.
And
all three groups.
You know, and you just kind of dovetail what Bill Crawford said and kind of, you know, added on to that, and that this is why I've got the smartest talk show audience in the whole country. And as we kind of deal with that, and one of my goals is we have to hear more voices.
Right.
We have to hear more voices because out of those voices come great ideas. Out of those voices come knowledge. Look at all the ideas and knowledge that comes just from the voices that participate on this program. Look at all of that over a year, over a week, over a month. And so we really have to do that. So I appreciate your call. Thank you. We may follow this up tomorrow. The NAACP wanted to remind you that this not only is this the third, this is the first Thursday of the year. This is the first Thursday of the month. And one way you get involved is be an NAACP member. You can check out their meeting at the Julia Carson Government Center, Fall Creek and Delaware, tonight at 6:30. Oh, if you want to read what I wrote, you can, you know, get your recorder. Available wherever great newspapers are sold. If they don't have that great newspaper where your newspapers are sold, you can call a recorder at 924-5143, 924-5143, 924-5143. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow, live at 1:00.